Thanks a lot. Yeah, 15 minutes. Interesting task. We'll see how it goes. But look, this is already slide four. Huh? So
you're going to send the template.
Yeah. I try to review some things, but most of you know better than I do anyway. So I will just flash things to make everyone happy, and then we move on. I will provide an outlook on the future, and the future is not as clean, but yesterday, after I came back, I thought, well, it's really late, and at some point we'll all die, so that's good. I guess I'm supposed to trigger a lively discussion. I try not to be provocative, as for those of you who were here last week, that went down fantastically. So, I could make life very easy. I could say, okay, forget all about precision, and boom, I have an effect that kilohertz. Or I could say, forget high order calculations, like you did with forget transformation, and boom, we have it. But I think I try to be a little bit more subtle. That won't work, but let's try. Okay. So when I started making up my mind of how to present this thing in a short way, I thought it's nice to go back to the word revolution. When the word NLO revolution came out, I was pretty much annoyed with it very quickly. But okay. In the end, I think it maybe was not such a bad term. Now, yesterday over a beer, I asked my experimental advisory committee of who they think is revolutionary and has become establishment. And maybe you can recognize some of these gentlemen. I'm not saying that the people doing the NLO QCD automation are as old as the Rolling Stones. I'm not saying their music is as boring. Okay. you can go for it. But I think it's a fair statement to say that quite a lot of the revolutionary technology that was developed about 10 years ago have become pretty much established. It's mature to some degree. I'm not saying it's perfect, and I'm not saying we have full control over everything, but we have lots of tools which we can play with. And so we have a little bit of a moving target, and one of the moving targets is to check in how far the technologies we developed for automation, next leaving order QCD, can be rolled out for electric week. Life is harder. There's not so many calculations yet, two or three with these tools. And I think we have, so this is the moving target. This is where we are. At the same time, beyond checking in how far we have to possibly refine technology for a more complicated part of the theory, there's a little bit that has to do with consolidating the establishment. You know, revolutionaries at some point become the government, and the government has to, you know, they can be dictators or benign, but at some point they have to deliver. And part of the delivery is that I'm fairly certain we will at some point in the near future have to push stuff to even higher multiplicities, and this will need some work in terms of speed, integration efficiency over phase space, you know, the little bit of nitty-gritty that is the difference between a visionary revolutionary and the hands-on government, which actually has to make sure that the tax is being paid. You can read it for yourself. There's lots of things that I'm fairly certain I haven't been complete. One of the things that is a little bit closer to my heart is we now have so many tools at hand, and we did quite a lot, but in terms of inputs, we are not, I have the feeling we could play a little bit with it. And one of the things that is, as I said, close to my heart is to check for slightly different, more process and kinematics dependent scale settings, just to see what it does to us, if it improves convergence, you know, if it increases stability. And I think the other thing that I believe is kind of important is, I think in terms of usage of this, and conscientious usage of these tools, we have a learning curve ahead still. So we roll these tools out to our experimental colleagues, and they do stuff with it, but there's a little bit of a black box feeling to it. And I have the feeling we have to do a little bit better than that. Higher orders are not completely trivial, and there's interesting ways to massively cock up. I think we should do something there. There's a couple of bits and pieces.
Can you give a few examples?
Yeah, for example, I mean, one of the things I would say is when we start discussing uncertainties, there's an interplay between what kind of central scale you choose and whether a factor of two makes any sense. Yeah, so if you take a ludicrous scale, which you adopted from some completely different process, port it to another process, and vary by a factor of two, I'm not sure what you learn. Yeah, so it's... I'm not saying that people are stupid. It's more like you have to get used to that. These tools are more subtle. They can deliver much more. And if they're used to their full potential, I'm not sure we completely discover. I'm not sure we completely max out the potential yet.
So there are a lot of measurements now of multi-jet and W plus multi-jet and so
exactly.
on, and they don't all agree perfectly. But I don't know that there's been a systematic study of why things are going wrong.
That is what, yeah, I mean, this is the stuff we can think about. Another thing, one of the things we could possibly use or be a little bit smarter about is when we make comparison to fixed order, is how we deal with non-perturbative uncertainties. And just running Pythagoras cervic also is not cutting it for me. So I'm just saying this.
Someone has Shepard alert, is that solve the problem?
No. Honestly, I don't care for that. I don't care, really. I just think we have to be smarter to make sure that the tools we kind of deliver in for say, let me call it a higher level type of analysis which goes beyond it, oh, Monte Carlo fits or doesn't fit. If it's more about do we really fully understand the dynamical structure of the theory in all possible aspects and corners, I think there's a little bit to be had still.
Can you give it a specific example of where you think that for a scale is not being used correctly in an experimental analysis?
Let me come to one example. Yeah, in a second. And it's a bad example. I just throw a bad example, and you can come up with better examples.
It's really an important experiment. Maybe another nice example. There is a really leading order calculation of the full TTH production indicator. With 80,000 Feynman diagrams at 3 level. And you want to understand what are the key physics mechanisms and all the channels that contribute there if you want to fully understand the systematics. So you have the tools that provide you numbers as a black box, but understanding the physics and the systematics is quite challenging.
So
there are also alternative ways of estimating the scale variation.
Sure.
There is some work by Cacciari that proposed some Bayesian method which is not the usual factor of two, and one can try this and, for instance, compare how it works in different cases like the one that people have done.
I'm not saying I have all the answers, and here's my 5 bullet points or so. It's just that I think there's a game to be had, and we're not playing it. That's all I want to point out. There's one other thing that I think comes a little bit as a byproduct of the automation. We start being able to calculate loop-induced processes like clue to vector boson pairs, and we can add one or two jets on top of that, without because if we play smart, we can identify loop-induced process categories plus an extra jet, and to some degree they're important. We can do leading order type of games like leading order merging with it, but we don't have an MC at NLO for this kind of stuff. And my feeling is that some part of the next to leading order technology for the two-loop diagrams could be used to possibly construct an MC at NLO for something like clue to WW, which I think would be a fantastic step forward. It costs some effort, but this is the kind of stuff that I believe where we have the technology, we have to assemble it, we have to work a little bit for it. It's not completely obvious, but there's a game to be had. And lastly, I think... at leading order, we already see an interplay of processes, and of course, at next leading order, life is harder. And we can check in how far we understand interference, spin effects, etc. And I just flash it. It's it's completely leading order. Hmm? It's a Lesouche study I'm involved in. That was it was just an example. I had the plots, okay? So I'm fairly certain there's much better examples. I'm just pointing this because I had the plots, and I'm lazy. So what you see is the following: we make a distribution of the number of jets in different categories that contribute to a WWDB bar background. We assume that it's a fully leptonic decay of the top, so we have two leptons, two neutrinos, two Bs. We check for the number of jets before and after VBF cuts in different categories.
And it's partonic level,
right? No, I think we run the parton shower and, yeah. And I think we may even have merged one or two jets in, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. It's more a question of principle. And what you see here on the right-hand side is what happens when we add up the individual contributions incoherently or coherently in random, so with and without interference. And it's a question that comes from experimenters. Oh, well, we want to measure TT bar. What happens if we add a pose like TWB? Is the interference positive or negative? You know, it's this kind of study in leading order. It's kind of cheap to do it at next to leading order, higher precision. It's not completely obvious. And, you know, this is another kind of avenue where we have to probe our tools to enable better measurements. And I'm fairly certain we can have a long discussion of whether this was a meaningful exercise or not. I don't know. But it was fun to do. Okay. Now, coming back to this topic of revolution, the last 2 or 3 years we saw.
Can we go back to this thing?
Sure.
So do you understand why this in some plots you have this very large interference with a lot of jets? Is this trustworthy?
No. I would say at some point when you put, I mean, you start with two jets. So to some degree, you're a little bit in the tail. And I would have stopped the plot at six jets. But we have made it to that end. At some point, you run out of statistics. Yeah, we could have done more.
You also have very large interference of two jets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes it doesn't. The two jets is the two things that you actually see. Yeah. So I'm not saying this is the polished final product. I'm just saying this is the kind of stuff I suppose we should be doing with our better tools. And let's face it, to generate the samples took some time to make sure that you completely understand how you run and how you define it, and we did lots of control plots to convince ourselves that we actually knew what we were doing. So you see in a way you see the unpolished but to some degree final product.
I know you don't want to focus too much on this plot, but what are yellow bands?
Huh?
What are the yellow bands?
The yellow bands are the statistical errors on the red. Yeah, so typically when you see this kind of plot, the yellow band is the error, statistical or otherwise. In that case, just statistical because we didn't do any variations really on the red, on the first line. Okay. I think Frank just didn't want to be associated with these young gentlemen here. I introduced this revolution thing because I always wanted to call Thomas German a hippie. I always wanted to do that. Unfortunately, he's not here, but okay. So we have the hippie-esque growth of two to two pros next to leading order. I tried to be complete. I failed probably. So if you don't see some calculation that's dear to your heart, just blame it on my complete ignorance. So it's an impressive list of over the last 2, 3, 4 years. And I think we learned quite a lot about the structures. We learned about different infrared subtraction schemes, and I just named three. I'm that I know of, maybe there's more QT subtraction, and probably I forgot, but it's similar to enjectinizing in a funny way. Now, my feeling is we are on the brink of understanding it on a level that we can dream of automating at least parts of it. I'm not saying it's a done deal. I'm not saying it's done. But my feeling is this is something we witness in the next 3-4 years, that large parts of this kind of calculation will be fully automated. And I think we will have tools, codes. They may be to some degree process specific, but there will be public codes where we press the button and we get results. Now, next to next leading order is more complicated than next to leading order. So we need a higher level of specialization in the way of how these tools are being used, in the way of how the user base is trained and educated of how to use these tools.
What do you put in all these leading blocks? Because some calculations exist in leading blocks, right?
Yeah, but I just did fixed order. I start with fixed order. Yeah? This is a true two-loop. These are true two-loop calculations of physical processes.
All the way through.
Yeah, so it's order alpha S squared. It's including the order alpha S squared corrections to the processes.
Okay. Yeah? But there is some hidden structure in the names that I don't fully understand. First, there are whole faces, there are columns, there are repetitions.
Okay, yeah, well spotted. I knew it was a mistake. I should have just written people. So semicolon,
yes,
is a divider between teams, and I try to have lighter and darker blue, but I realized that it looked nice, that it probably looks slightly nicer on my screen than here.
Some competitive things. Some
people compete with themselves and do the same calculation again with different I didn't dare to ask, for example, if these calculations completely agree with each other, but hey, I assume so. I don't know. Ask them. Okay, so yeah, let's leave this nice gentleman behind us. As far as I understand, there's a couple of technical issues related to this stuff. One of the issues is that part of the process is that we have to include next to leading order amplitudes in divergent regions. And so things become a stability issue, and it's not completely clear to me in how far the automated methods will carry through if we start pushing to higher multiplicities. We'll see. So I just try to have a list of things that I think is stuff that will be sorted while this revolution unfolds and the first aristocrats are being brought to the guillotine. Okay. Now, because I have not really a great idea about fixed order, I move on and talk about matching to resummation. Apparently, despite Kirill's strong vows, I kind of believe that there is a little bit of a point in it, so I talk about it. I should say that I completely ignore analytic resummation because it's very confusing to me how you resum this versus that. And it's been made more beautiful because I haven't seen any kind of systematic review of different analytic resummation techniques where they are confronted. Maybe there exists a beautiful one, but it's very hard for an outsider to go down to understanding how QT resummation combines or doesn't combine with threshold resummation and how the full thing is different from BFKL or other stuff. So I'm not going to bore you with that. I'm confused. And I will concentrate on the Partenshaw instead. I just want to make a stupid statement. If you compare the Partenshaw, there's two ways of looking at it. One is, oh yeah, you just want to have a few more partons, it would be nice to have them, Planck Partenshaw. Fine. Another way of looking at it is to say, well, actually, these tools do something like numerical resummation, and then we can ask ourselves, how accurate are they parametrically? And in order to do that, you have to compare with something. And the thing I compare I kind of understand and can compare to is Deuterius summation. And if you look at the pseudocode form factors in Deuterius summation, which is the stuff underlying, for instance, HRES or RESPOS, I can identify terms in the pseudocode form factor. And by looking at these terms, I think I can say that the parton shower where known is probably correct if it's run with the right scales at next to leading log accuracy on the level of pseudocode form factors where we know them. Okay, whatever this means.
But this is all seen in recoil. And when you look at QT, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Because you're just looking at some colorless object.
Sure.
And it's
sure.
Very inclusive.
It's very inclusive, and I'm not saying it's next leading log for all observers, just for things where we know, where we really know it and have a good analytical
control. But even next to leading log is highly non-trivial here. Because if you don't do the recoil right, mm-hmm. This is the question just raised by Dave Soper and Nathan Nutt. Mm-hmm. But next to the log is not a triple coherent dipole shower is what gets through, unless they're very careful.
I'm just saying. You typically include these terms, and then you have to see that you get everything like scales, etc., correct.
It's not just about scales. Yeah,
sure. I agree.
Okay.
Now, just to give you an idea, because yesterday Andrea said that we should start checking Trelyan, and last week Sasha Klasov claimed that no Monte Carlo does it. I found some plots in a paper of one of my friends. So Stefan Höche wrote a new parton shower recently together with Stefan Preske, and they did exactly this kind of comparison. So it's very precise Trelyan data from run one, and it's exactly the kind of stuff we should be using. So on the left you see the PT spectrum of the Trelyan pair with pressed electrons, and on the right you see the phi star spectrum, which is like the angular correlation of the two leptons, and actually the phi star spectrum is, if you look at it, it's ridiculously precise, and this is a real challenge to get right. It comes in different rapidity bins, which apparently is a problem for some of the codes. It's not necessarily. I'm just saying this is exactly the kind of very precise checks we have to be doing, and we typically. I think the Monte Carlo community, the parton shower community, does it quite often. This does not propagate to the outside world, so we have to do something about how we deal with this kind of information in a more coherent fashion.
So I've got some multi-jet merging here?
Yeah, but it's just 0 and 1 jet to make sure that somewhere here you still have some accuracy. Because the parton shower, of course, as you know, when you go to scales of the order of 30, 40 GeV, the parton shower will start keeling over. Mm-hmm. And it's just to get the high PT tail.
But the error bar is only
the error bar here is, of course, the data. It's a leading order merging, so the error bar is only the merging systematics, and we push just because he pushed the merging cut to 5 GeV, so he varied between 5 and 20 GeV just to check how robust this thing is.
Why would you need a new parton shower to do all that? I mean, you could have done with Chef, I suppose, or with other ones.
What's
the reason of using as something new?
Because we believe that we can improve parton showers.
And you cannot say something.
I'll show you a plot. I'll show you a plot what you think what we can do. Okay.
So can I ask you, why do you get, for instance, emerging scales so large at high PT?
I think I don't know. The short answer is I don't know. I could speculate, but I don't want to. My feeling is it's. There's implicitly a statistical uncertainty because you have independent runs. Yeah, you cannot have the same events with two different merging cuts. So you have two independent samples, and at some point you see that they're statistically just not the same. That's my feeling. I don't know. In all fairness, I don't know. But what gives me kind of confidence is that in places where we have enough statistics, it's kind of smallish. So I think this is really testament to the fact that down here you start not having many events.
I'd like to make a request.
Sure.
A fuchsia plot like this. These kind of things, we're going at, the data has percent level precision, so we should make the Y scales on these comparisons.
I agree.
So that we can actually look at these things.
I agree. Yeah.
Should look at the CMS. Except the CMS as well, precision.
I completely agree, but you know it's what happens when you steal plots from others. And in fact, I thought 20% is kind of okay because last week Klasov was warning that the typical inaccuracy in some of the truth series is up to 20%. So never mind. Okay, we have two schemes to combine higher orders. Like next leading order with the parton shower. I'm not going into that because Andrea talked about it. I want to talk about the stuff that he didn't talk about, which is multi-jet merging. And I'm biased. I like the method and I think it's kind of neat. And I also think it maximizes to some degree the knowledge we generate by having these automated next leading order tools. So just to give you an idea why I'm after it is, we do something with the parton shower which boils down to combining leading order processes of different jet multiplicities in one inclusive sample. So we calculate something like QQ bar going to two photons. And of course, when you do the leading order, it's two photons plus x. And we start playing with the matrix elements in such a way that the plus x doesn't become jets, and then we add gamma, gamma plus jet, etc. So we make first the kind of implicitly inclusive samples exclusive, and then we start adding things on top. And it's just one plot. It's a PT spectrum of the dye photons at 7 TV and in a certain mass, you know, I believe. And one of the things that you see is there's this little mean here which you only get from configurations where the two photons come close to each other and recoil against a very hard jet. This is typically something that you wouldn't get with the parton shower because the parton shower would start at the invariant mass of the photons and it would not generate any jet harder than the invariant mass of the two photons. If you do this kind of multi-jet merging, you get this kind of stuff for free. And that's why. You either get this knee or you don't. That is kind of nice, and I like this plot. What makes it really sweet is it was compared with Dipox, which is an NLO code, and with 2 gamma NNLO, and you see that the description of the shape is not really driven by higher orders in terms of loops, but it's driven by higher orders in terms of legs. So quite often, you don't really need the loops, and quite often it's more important to get more legs right. And as a consequence, it means that if you wanted to get 3 or 4 extra emissions right, you would have to go N3 or N4 LO, which is a far cry from what we can do at the moment. So there's something to be said about having technologies which combine different jet multiplicities into one sample. It kind of bridges the gap between what we have and what we maybe would love to have.
Is this okay? But I mean, one question that immediately comes up when you do that is the different multiplicities don't necessarily. I mean, you're just a 1.3 uniformly multiplying all multiplicities.
Yeah.
And that's you've got no argument to know that that's the reason.
Why?
Suppose I took the leading order multiplicity multiplied by 1.4, and then the subleading multiplicity is multiplied by 1.
Yeah, but
you get something that.
No, but because of our reweighting, I mean, you know it better than I do, probably. Because of the reweighting with the Sudakovs, we kind of mimic the effect of higher orders, which is exactly what this approximate NLO does. We just do it a little bit smarter, because we use the Sudakovs and not just numbers. So that is why it works. we implicitly get the relative ratio right to some alpha S log type of accuracy. Look.
Is 1.2 would be the NNLOK factor or
this is the NNLOK factor.
Yeah, but it was fixed to hit one of the bins here.
What I'm basically saying is I think you got lucky. Yes. And you chose the block.
Yes.
They got you lucky.
No. No, we got lucky in so many different processes. At some look, let me put it like that. At some point you play, you get lucky once. Okay, lucky. You play again, you get lucky twice. Twice. Good. You get lucky third, fourth, fifth time. At some point, luck gets replaced by coincidence. Okay, I believe it's more than that, but maybe we can settle in the middle and say it's coincidence that we get so many things right without working for it.
Can you technically explain what went into the plot on the left? It's a merged sample of how many gamma-gamma plus how many jets?
This is gamma-gamma plus up to three jets.
Up to three jets.
And Pythia, I mean, is just gamma-gamma. So it's don't look at it. It's not
can
good.
Can you explain the data is just gamma-gamma?
It's gamma-gamma.
So I'm still not puzzled why the data has this king.
What special about 50 GeV?
That was the 50 GeV is the isolation of the photons plus the isolation of the photons. Implicitly by your requirements on the photons you.
Okay, so it's measured in the isolation.
Yeah.
So can you turn this around and can we try to understand why the NNLO calculation perhaps doesn't agree as well? So the NNLO has. What is it? A 0, 1, and 2 jet multiplicity. So if you were to take your
the NNLO is 0 and 1 jet.
And two jets.
Sorry.
So if you were to, just an exercise, if you were to go to your left plot and take out the third jet multiplicity that you've done in this merging, what would it look like?
Pretty much the same.
It would look the same.
You checked it looked pretty much the same.
So then it's kind of confusing that on the left you're getting such good agreement and on the right you have this.
But at some point you're still at the shower on top.
Right. But also, there are two jet gets a factor of 1.3.
You know, I understand that there's.
That's not there in next.
I understand there's 1.3 that is not
quite correct because. But it's not the two-jet leading order matrix element. It's a two-jet leading order matrix element with a very specific scale choice plus Sudakov.
Yeah? I mean, but this is exactly
not just vanilla, the same thing.
Of course, it's not vanilla, the same thing.
This is exactly what you want to understand. Yeah. You want to go back and understand what exactly made the plot of the left agree. Is it the third-jet multiplicity? Is it the scale setting? I mean, it was good to answer that question.
It's a combination. I think it's a combination of scale setting and having sufficiently many jets.
Because you just said it's not the third jet, so it's the scale setting. We're kind of.
It's
you said that it's the photon isolation. All the details of the hadronic activity that surrounds the photon, right, that you don't have.
I'm not sure it's the isolation. I think it's the PT covering the photon.
I think it's a combination because if you wouldn't have a PT cut, you wouldn't have an invariant mass. And the invariant mass triggers the position of the knee.
So can't you do this now at NLO, MEPS at NLO?
Yeah.
So how does that look?
Really good. I just want to make sure it doesn't get any worse.
It's not a guarantee that it always gets better with an NLO, right? There are some distributions that don't always do better.
True, I didn't want to make it a show of how great MEPS at NLO works, because, I mean, we can discuss this at another place. I want to point out structures, and I used the selection of plots I had at hand.
Can I just add, there is a tool out there, and I'm partial because I'm an author of it, that allows you to merge fixed order samples. Because one of the things I'm concerned about, and part of the origin of thinking behind that tool, is that you're doing fixed order, and you're doing branch out, that's merging on the other. And there's several steps of scale fixing, of merging different multiplicities and sequences. And if you're trying to disentangle what's going on, I think it's useful to break those steps up into pieces. The ability to sort of do something which, here's the advert of loop sim, gives you an extra handle on the merging, which I think if you really want to get to these kinds of questions is interesting to look at. For example, you could add the NLO two jet sample here on the right hand side. And see whether that fixes up this discrepancy.
which would give you both the normalization and the third jet.
I can say that Hasidic order, we play this kind of game at infinitum by doing different scale choices, different from the Parton shower, by playing, by, for instance, comparing. It was one of the first things we did. In MCFM, you can constrain the phase space for the relit mission in such a way that it doesn't produce an extra jet. Yeah, so you do W plus one or W plus two jets exclusive. So you do the next leading order, you add the virtual, you add the real, but the real is constrained to be inside the jet. And we did, what we did was we run our leading order stuff, and we added the Sudakov form factor on top and convinced ourselves that it's in as good agreement as possible. If we did not do the Sudakov, we saw that we get the inclusive relatively well to some degree. And this was on fixed order only. We did this kind of studies, and
all I'm saying is there are tools out there that also allow you to do this fixed order
Maybe
interest.
It's something that we can do again in the ratio, and we should do it again at next to leading order, where we didn't go that deep because we have the feeling that we already know. Okay. So sometimes legs win over loops, and we could do the same thing at next leading order. There's a similar to leading order where we have a number of different schemes available. The algebra merging is different from ours. At next to leading order, there's different tools available. So just to show you how it works. You do an MC at NLO, and you see because we don't smear out our skill, we have a little. And then you constrain your emission, and you add X plus jet at next leading order. You constrain the emission, X plus two jets at next leading order, constrain the emission, X plus three at leading order, add it all up, inclusive sound.
You redo that with that new shower, doesn't that thing largely go away?
Yeah, it goes a little bit away because we have a different definition of the evolution parameter, which is a little bit more benign. So there's an interplay, of course, of how we define jet, how we define internally our jets, and it's nice if it's pretty much in agreement with what the Parton shower thinks what the emission scale is, but it does not necessarily translate one to one to the PP of X. So this is roughly how it goes. You start at an MC at NO with the Sudakovs, you start rejecting emissions and so on and so forth. Okay. Now Lesouche, in the upcoming Lesouche, there's a huge comparison of lots of different tools which do Higgs plus jets at different accuracies, resummed, not resummed. So in the upcoming Lesouche proceedings, there will be a huge study of what we can do in Higgs plus jets. And I just want to advertise that it exists. So you can see, it's completely confusing, and you have to go down to the error plots and see how it happens, and you see different color coding, and it's a nice overview of what the technology at the moment does. And it's, to the best of my knowledge, the first time that we do such an exercise where we throw everything that we have at one set of observables. And this is exactly the kind of study that I believe we should do much more often. Okay. Now, so run one is over, it's half time, so where are we? Probably you can read for yourself. The NLO revolution for QCD is in a consolidation phase. I think we have a pretty good handle, and I think we know what we do. What is not so clear is how things start comparing. So we have to go back in the nitty-gritty and see how things compare when you start matching it with a Parton shower. We have to be systematic to better understand the subtleties that sit on top of the fixed order calculation. And I think there's a very steep learning curve for everyone involved. And I think there's a learning curve in how we max out this fantastic technology for Pheno users. One of the things that is dear to my heart is loop-induced processes, because we can do them now. And there's something to be said on how we improve them and how we improve the handling. We have the first number of tools for the first Monte Carlo proof for relatively simple processes. They've never been systematically compared, really. This is something apart from this ongoing Lesouche thing. I think this is something we should be doing, or the authors should be doing, or someone should be doing. And I think I hope we learn quite a lot of how we do things better, more consistently, or so. The two methods are very different, and I have the feeling that it's not clear to me whether the last word has been spoken. We have to see. The attention is now turning to next reading order lecture week for the next reading order community. We have the first benchmark results. The setup is even more tricky, so it will need even more focus and concentration from the experimenters. Now, in half time, the coach has a little speech to tell people what he expects from the second half. And I think the one thing is when we think about making this anticipated next-to-next leading order revolutionary thing, I think we have at some point we will want to settle the issue of how to do the infrared subtraction. Is it subtraction? Is it slicing? I think the judgment is out. We will have to see what methods are actually superior and lend themselves in a more robust way to automation. And then the question is, can we automate next-to-next leading order at all? Can we push it? What are the bottlenecks? And my feeling is that the use of code will become more and more tricky, and training will be needed. And my feeling is that in the experimental community, we will find a new brand of experimenters who become specialists in theory tools. So I think we will start.
Is there a reason why the experimentalists should do this?
I'm
asking you.
I don't know. What I think is we will have to accept that the interface between this kind of theory and experiment becomes more and more tricky in such a way that we have to start populating the space in between. And I think this will kind of soften the classical distinction, are you a theorist or an experimenter, will soften. We see it already happening a little bit, but I think this is a trend that will become stronger. And my feeling is there will be a time, maybe from the experimental side, maybe from the theory side, when collaborative work, like making sure that the detector doesn't run away, will be replaced by making sure that you understand the Monte Carlos you use. So this kind of service work will probably become much, much broader.
But I think they're on the good way.
I'm not saying it's not happening. I think it's a trend that will become much, much stronger as the tools become more complicated.
Well, the commonest question is, can they be made simpler? I think that at the moment, you know, this first stage of developing all these tools has been enormous progress, but you get things that are quite complicated. But as we move forward, so I think one of the things curious can also do is actually make these tools somewhat quicker to use, somewhat more
reliable.
Part of what you were saying at the consolidation.
Yeah, I think that my problem/issue is that there's a certain black box attitude, which I think will kill us at some point. It won't be fun if you use stuff that is really complicated as a black box because someone told you to do it like that and you press a button without understanding it. I think this is not a healthy attitude. Okay. Kegel hinted at limitations of the perturbative expansion. This is something that we will hit the wall at some point, or we won't. I don't know. The future is uncertain. We will all die. This is the we will all die part. Just for the fun of it, one of the things that I think at the moment limits us in going. I think one of the limitations in producing something like an MC at NNLO is the intrinsic accuracy of the parton shower. And one of the things you could dream of when you're young and innocent is to check if you can include higher order terms. So Stefan rewrote his parton shower to put in these higher order terms. And what you see is the following. in cream, you see what you get when you are just strictly leading order part on shower, so you don't do any kind of CMW scheme. That's the differential 1-0 jet rate in X plus jet production. Yeah. So you basically cluster backwards with the KT algorithm, and you look for the last clustering until you have clue to Higgs. So it gives you a handle in how far you understand your radiation pattern. So this can be to some degree translated to the PT of the QCD recoil against the jet. Against the Higgs. Green is what you would get at leading order. Blue is what you get from self-respecting parton shower, which does the scale setting against the CMW, which actually includes the A2 term. And in blue, we added a scale variation of the KT by a factor of 2, making sure that we get all the scale compensation right. In red and black and gray, you see what happens when we add one order higher. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying it's done. I'm not saying it's completely debugged. And this is the initial state only. Final state is a little bit more tricky at the moment.
What is one order higher?
What does it mean here?
Huh?
What do you mean adding one more order? We added,
in here we add A3 and B2.
That's an inclusive statement. I mean, in parton shower is...
We added it in differential form. So we added the next leading order scale function. We convinced ourselves that by integrating it, you reproduce the anomalous dimension.
But it's still a 1-2 splitting parton shower.
It's 1-2 splitting with... Okay, there's one exception, because part of it is... one part is the splitting where you replace a quark with an anti-quark or another quark of another flavor, and we do something there. But we basically add the higher orders on top of the 1-2 splitting.
And you have a 1-3. You treat it all as 1-2.
We treat them all as 1-2, apart from the ones that you can't. That's why I said it's a first step, and I just want to say that I'm not saying it's done, I'm not saying it's perfect or so, but I think this is the kind of stuff we should start playing with. Whether we succeed is a completely different question.
And at the more differential level, maybe this is a naive question, but how do you know what exponential is? I
mean, that's
for example, does the 3 splitting exponentiate?
We don't.
Put it in there.
But we also, when we do the CMW scale setting, we already don't know whether it's the right thing to do for every observable always. Yeah. So we look at the Sudakov just very kind of hermetically and say, okay, looking at the Sudakov alone and assuming everything goes right, what can we do to improve it?
And so your criteria is just to give you something that upon integration would give you the correct A2.
Exactly. I mean, it's hard to compare, because we can only, our comparison, that's what I said before, is two-tier summation for a very simple process. And if you port it to anything else,
do you have a plan to improve resummations that involve the hadronic final state more? Is that a goal?
But it's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah. But you have other handles besides QT, right? You have other things you can resum that are more complicated, broadening and all sorts of other variables that probe different...
Exactly. It will be interesting to take this then and then just check. If we go for different sets of observables which involve the final state, how do we do? Do we do better? Do we do worse? How do the uncertainties behave? It's more empirical than first principles driven, because as you know, you don't know a priori what exponentiates how. If you look exclusive enough, it's just a little game to see what we can do. Okay. Of course, you have overtime. In football, you always have overtime, unless Germany plays Brazil. I should do that. Okay. There's a couple of things you can ask yourself, and this has quite often to do with stuff that is not super duper obvious that it's a top side 100 paper or so. It has to do with cross-validation, comparing in detail theoretical foundations of certain algorithms like multi-jet merging. There's some unglamorous improvements to be had. Advanced scale setting, can we do an on-the-fly tree weighting with different PDFs or with different factors of alpha s? For matrix elements, kind of straightforward. For the parton shore, not quite as obvious. How is it with PDFs? Do we at some point have to do PDFs that have some resummation or parton shore in it? So the first attempts are not really fantastic, but maybe we know better now. So there's lots of little nitty-gritty that can be done. One of the things I didn't really say is one of the bottlenecks is phase-based integration. Phase-based integration is something that is very hard to publish. It hurts to improve it, but it needs to be done. And beyond that, there's lots of dirty corners I don't even want to dream about because we'll die. But then there's penalties, and as a German, I love penalties. And maybe we're lucky and we find something so spectacular that all our looking for precision becomes obsolete because the next 5 years we do something completely different. That would be fantastic. That's penalties. Hmm?
Okay, so we have many questions, but still, I'm sure there's still a few things that you want to know from Frank.
Should be a discussion more than.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just this point. Why would it make? It wouldn't be obsolete, right?
No, but your focus would shift. I mean, part of this pushing for higher. Let me put it like that. I don't think higher precision is a okay. For some people, it's a goal in itself. I'm not quite sure it's a goal for me. I don't think my plans would be to be more precise than I have to in order to facilitate discoveries. To some degree, I think this would demonstrate a pretty poor understanding of physics. So yes, there's lots to be had in pushing for precision, and there's lots of fun to be had from the formal side. But I'm not a formal guy of person kind of person. I'm more a plumber. And so I don't do more than I have to. That's how plumbers work. So
various people have said, I found gamma, there's a new resonance, forget precision. By the end, what 3-sigma can you reach? Mm-hmm. That's maybe 4 or 5 sigma if you combine the two experiments. So 4 sigma is 25%. Mm-hmm. We're going to get a factor 30 more data within 3 years. That means that by the end of 2018, we're going to have 4% of this thing. Mm-hmm. So we want precision there. So you can drop precision for 2 years, but you can't drop it for very long.
Yeah, I know. At some point, the pipes will explode. That is clear. and we have stuff in our face. I think there's something to be said about pragmatism. And it would be interesting to see how large or how small our uncertainties are for meaningful diphoton spectra around the 750, if I take this as a straw man, with the tools that we have. And it would give me an idea of how far I have to push it or not. And I think this is a meaningful, I mean, it's an exercise I haven't done. But this is the kind of exercise I would do before thinking that I should do an N3 and O calculation for the diphoton spectrum. I would first check whether the tools I have and the knowledge I have are sort of to be quite precise in what I do.
No, but then the thing decays also into double squares.
It would be more general maybe than this inverse LHC problem that we'd like to have. You need to figure out what the hell is it or is it not, and then you go everywhere and see where you see deviations or no deviations, and some of them would require precision.
Also, I think we have to realize we don't have unlimited manpower. Manpower from the theory side is as limited, or maybe even more limited than from the experimental side. I would think it's more limited, but okay.
Still 300 papers on this.
These are not necessarily the kind of people you ask when you ask for more precision. So there's a very limited subset of people who play this precision game, and I think we have to be very conscientious about what we can do in a meaningful way to match the precision needs from you guys.
There will be a discussion on the moment.
So perhaps one thing that I want to understand is how all this is used afterwards in the experimental analysis, because most of the backgrounds are calculated by sidebands, right? And then I want to know when the precision will be high enough to detect new physics in smooth distributions, not in the search for resonance, where probably precision is not needed. No?
I think one of the examples for that is Let me do a Teletron example. W plus two jets.
Yeah. Then let's go to W plus.
That was a little blip on the top of something where sideband subtraction didn't work, and I think we used. I think practically every Monte Carlo that could describe it has been used, and no Monte Carlo found any way to describe it. So at some point, this was one of the things which influenced how we dealt with it. So there's an implicit statement to that, namely that we had enough trust in the tools that we said, the tools that we had available at that moment were good enough to answer a question. And I think this is... this kind of statement still holds true. I'm not saying it holds true everywhere, but I think one of the things that happens in the unclamorous parts of, or more unclamorous parts of analysis, like the typical standard model V plus jets analysis, you know, this kind of stuff, is to validate the tools and to convince the wider community that you can trust them, even in places where it's not a simple sideband.
To give another example, so if you, from the Higgs going to WW, you need to understand the WW background. This is taken from the MLL sideband. But all of the majority of the uncertainty on the background is the extrapolation from this sideband to the signal region. And so a better calculation just reduces the errors.
And can you claim 1% precision in this extrapolation, right?
Well, it's a little bit larger than that. When you add the PDFs, the scales, the matching.
It is
very small because you go as close as possible, right? We can have another discussion, but if you look at the data, there seems to be a slope that is not reproduced in MLL. So that's part also of the systematic, but we can't do better if we can't show that we control this shape.
I think
another example of a recommended dependency path is the one with T H. Actually, the main reason why we don't have the specificity is the theory and set.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, right, we take the predictions from the Monte Carlo and then we might have control regions where we fit the normalization. But in very many cases, for example this one, we're taking the shape straight from Monte Carlo. Yeah, so it has more, it's not as simple as sideband.
Sometimes what happens in searches, I'm told, is that you try to fit a sideband region and it just doesn't work at all. The Monte Carlo just doesn't describe the distributions. And then this gets shuttled off into a black hole because it's not the interest of the search. And so the theorists don't officially learn about how bad things are. There's some B plus Higgs search, I think, where there's, you know, B, multi-B plus jet sideband. There are a lot of problems, apparently.
So at what point you could suspect new physics that is the question. So
you got to be careful.
Just calculation.
But it would be nice to make some of those public, and sometimes they get made public. Like CMS was using a technique of trying to calibrate the Z plus jets, where Z goes to missing, with gamma plus jets. and how well does that ratio work? It works okay, but it's not perfect. And they wrote a paper documenting, you know, sort of how well it works. That was good. That doesn't always happen. That's this question of who should be using the tools. Should they be inside the experimental collaboration? And of course, they know everything that's happening. Another way in principle theorists can provide results is by generating a broad spectrum of things at high accuracy. I mean, we tried to do this with these n-tuples, and then the experimentalists can go in and analyze it with whatever cuts they want. They don't have to tell the theorists how they're using it. That's not very practical for fully showered events because they're just too huge. Now, I think if you're using Pauhegg, I'm not an expert on this, but there's an intermediate stage where you do the expensive loop calculations and then you generate this thing that still needs to be showered. But those could be stored as n-tuples. As far as I know from talking to Stefan, Sherpa doesn't work the same way, and so you don't have a stage analogous to that in Pauhegg, or maybe I'm wrong.
No, we don't, but I guess we could do it. It's a little bit of an overhead. It's not impossible, right?
So you spend a lot of time calculating a lot of these matrix elements, yeah. And in principle, you'd like it to be maximally useful and not have to account. Yeah.
But you know, there's a game between human CPU and a farm.
Yeah.
And if you make a library of calculated matrix elements of Atlas and CMS, then pick them up and both use them, you are losing one bit of cross-checking or something.
Next to multiple items.
I don't like the joke about benefits.
I know. but you know, at some point you have to make sure that everyone is entertained.
Okay. So we can thank Frank again.